I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Conference Committee to order. Today is May 6, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present, starting with the House. Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Heintzeman.
Heintzeman present.
Chair Ingebretson.
Present.
Senator Rood.
Rood present.
Senator Eichhorn.
Eichhorn present.
Senator Tomassoni.
Here.
Senator Westrum.
Senator Westrum will be here in a minute.
Thank you. All present.
A quorum is present. Senator Ingebretson.
You did call the meeting to order, correct? Yeah, I'm sorry. Do you have any? All right. You can hear me okay? Rick? You can hear me okay. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've just got a just an opening statement here, with regards to moving forward here. We found 2 days ago, I and the committee found your line of questioning, and I think the members, and all due respect to the members the other day, due to the unreasonable out of line, I thought they were. Our position on the PCA's California Emissions Standard, as you know, rulemaking has been consistent over the last year and a half, Chair Hansen. The Senate made efforts last session where we offered compromise only for our recommendation to go without any consideration whatsoever after numerous phone calls, numerous contacts. We are once again offering compromise on our top priority in the effort to get a budget passed before the end of the regular session. I never said anything about a shutdown, Mr. Chair. That has been the rhetoric of your own party as well as our governor. As you remember, some time ago, the governor was going to shut down for various reasons. I'm not sure where he stands now, but that was thrown out at the beginning of this session. In this conference committee, we're talking about compromise, which is what we will see in this first Senate offer. With that, I will defer to Mr. Stanley, who will give the committee, with your indulgence, an overview and the stand for questions on this first proposal.
Mr. Stanley.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. I'm Ben Stanley, Senate Committee Counsel. Mr. Chair, at Senator Ingebritson's request, I've just sent you and your staff a Senate offer, and I'll just briefly walk through that offer now. The Senate is offering to replace Senate Article 2, Section 122, with that's the Vehicle Emission Standards Authority repeal, with a two-year moratorium on adoption of those standards. And so what the Senate's offering is for the PCA not to adopt those standards prior to January 1st, 2024. The Senate is also offering to accept House Article 5, Section 31. That's the section on page R22 of the side-by-side that creates the outdoor engagement grant account. That's the account that would hold the private donations for the No Child Left Inside program. The Senate's offer is to accept the creation of the account, but to leave the money question undecided for now. The Senate's also offering to accept House Article 9 in its entirety. That's the electric-assisted bicycle article. In exchange, the Senate requests that the House accept the following Article 2 sections. Sections 124 and 157, these are the two sections that deal with manure spreading. Sections 171 and 172, these are the two sections that deal with whole effluent toxicity for sugar beet processing plants. And section 161, which is the PCA analysis of the Green Tier program. And finally, the Senate requests that the House agree to handle both of the LCCMR articles in this bill. And Mr. Chair, that concludes what I have to say, unless there are questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if there are no questions, and I can wait a second or two to see if anybody wants to respond here, but I'd like to respond as well.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I have a couple questions about the LCCMR articles. So are you saying that those, we would include those, but they would still need to be negotiating the differences?
That's correct. So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So, Mr. Chair, as you, and thank you, Mr. Stanley, for that very clear description. As you mentioned in previous conversations, the language that is up for discussion has been properly vetted through the committee process, and I do not see any point in continuing this meeting this morning. We look forward to seeing your counter offer. Now, I know, Mr. Chair, you were going to go through the LCCMR bills. As you know, and everybody in this committee knows, we have vetted that. We've gone over it several times, especially the one that's 2 years old. So I see really no reason for us to be here. So with that, Mr. Chair, I and my members will be logging off, waiting for your counteroffer.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, we will be continuing the meeting and going through questions. Sure. We have many members on our conference committee who do not serve on the LCCMR like you or I do. And so they have some questions, and we will proceed with that. I think it's helpful. So.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And members, we will continue with the meeting. And we will continue the meeting with the House members only, as the Senate has departed. Ms. Nash, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and who you're with for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Becca Nash. I'm the director of the LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. And we had some questions from members, maybe just starting about the RFP process and a little bit of history on the LCCMR and how how requests come in and how they're vetted and how the money is achieved. So just some very basic information that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair and members, happy to do that. So every year the LCCMR issues a request for proposal, and that request for proposal states the LCCMR's priorities within our whole constitutional mandate of protecting, preserving, conserving, and enhancing Minnesota's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. So we do have a rather broad mission, and the RFP kind of zeroes down, focuses in on what the LCCMR's specific priorities are within that broad mission. And those priorities are also a result of our strategic plan. So we issue the RFP, and then we receive proposals, and the RFP is open for anyone across the state to submit proposals. So it's, you know, local, state, cities, township, counties, tribal groups, nonprofits, for-profits, anybody who has an idea to address some of our priorities is welcome to submit. The staff then goes through a fairly thorough vetting process to ensure that proposals, again, meet our constitutional purpose. We also look to make sure that proposals address the priorities that have been set out in our RFP. We also screen the proposals to ensure that it contains eligible costs and that it's not in conflict with any of the prohibitions that are itemized in our statute. Staff then reviews all of the proposals against our 10 LCCMR adopted evaluation criteria. And then staff does apply a score before we hand over all the proposals to the members. The members then have a chance to take in all that information, and they actually have two rounds of scoring that they do. There's a first cut that is made early on in the process. If applicants survive that first cut, they're invited in to present to the LCCMR Commission. And typically we have about 5 days of presentations, pretty intense. intensive and opportunities for questions and answers with the presenters, and members ask really great questions and kind of dig in to the details there. We have another round of scoring then, and staff accepts all the independent scores from the members, and we calculate the mean and the median, and then we rank the proposals and send them back, provide a list to the members, ranked kind of high to low, and the members decide collaboratively how they're going to go about making their final decisions. In the case of the 2020 proposal process, we received 290 proposals requesting about $203 million. 126, so less than half of those, were invited back to present. And then from that list, 77 projects were selected for funding. The members typically go through each project line by line and figure out initially on simple majority how much funding to allocate to each of those projects. And then when we get to the bottom, there's a vote on the whole package, and that vote requires 12 of the 17 members voting in favor of it to be an official recommendation. And then one more step I'll just say is that any of the research projects that we receive by statute are required to be peer reviewed. So all of those proposers submit what's called a research addendum, and that really goes into kind of the methods of their research. And we seek, we try to get at least three external experts in that field. This would be people outside of the state of Minnesota to independently, anonymously review the research, provide comments, which we then anonymize and send back to the proposer. And it's a really good process to make sure that we're not repeating work that's already been done, that researchers are using the latest scientific knowledge, and that the projects are set up to hopefully, you know, produce the results that we're hoping to find from that work. So that's sort of another layer of vetting that we do.
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nash. I'm wondering, for the benefit of the public and all of us, if you would just briefly review sort of the history of how this whole process came about and who the members of the committee are and how they're chosen.
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrison, I'm happy to. So the LCCMR is a 17-member body, and that's made up from 5 senators, 5 representatives, and 7 citizens. Of those 7 citizens, 1 is appointed by the Senate, 1 is appointed by the House, and then the remaining 5 are appointed by the governor. And those are staggered terms, so it's not always the same House or the same Senate or the same governor that's making those appointments. On the House and Senate, we automatically are lucky to have the participation of the chairs of the House and Senate Environment Committees, and then each of those bodies decides which of the remaining members to appoint. And it's 3 from the majority and 2 from the minority. So it's a really kind of interesting mix of party and body affiliations in a way that does require compromise. No one body has a majority, so you need to compromise in order to get that 12 member vote. Did I answer your question, or was there more to that?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. That's great. And then also just briefly, you know, the constitutional amendment and sort of the just a brief history of how we come to get to benefit from these projects.
Ms. Nash.
Great, Mr. Chair. Members, so the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is a permanent fund in the state treasury. And it was established through a vote by citizens. There have actually been 3 votes by citizens over the years, 1 to create the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, another to strengthen it and increase the contribution from the state lottery that goes into the trust fund, and then a 3rd vote, which extended the period that that dedication from the lottery would be constitutionally mandated. In all three votes, it was over 77% support. So this received, you know, three times it went to the voters, three times it received a high support from Minnesota citizens.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Ms. Nash, for the background.
And maybe following up on that, Ms. Nash, because it's been somewhat confusing of when does the authorization, the constitutional authorization, end?
Mr. Chair, the constitutional language says through 2025. And so we interpret that to mean through December of 2025.
And that is, but the corpus continues, is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is a permanent fund in the state treasury. It is only that dedication from the 40% of the proceeds from the state lottery that is constitutionally secure through end of 2025.
And members of, Representative Wozlawick, and then I'm just going to say, Representative Heintzman is may have a comment, but he is in audio, so it may be difficult. So I'll just say if we actually get a connection, I may have to, I think he just...
I pulled over, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wozlawick, if we can get Representative Heintzman in, because I know he's got a couple conflicts. So Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so, you know, there's obviously some things here that are pretty important to my district. Just want to thank Director Nash for being here and for the work that her team and all those on the LCCMR have put into getting these proposals together. And, of course, I participated in that as well as Chair Hansen and others. And I'd like to see this thing get across the finish line. And, you know, in negotiations, there's sometimes some tense moments, but I think that, you know, we all have the same expectation here that this stuff gets done and the lights will stay on and these bills will get passed. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all those that I have just mentioned. This thing's going to get done one way or the other. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nash, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about sort of, I guess, overall impact of the projects that the LCCMR has recommended across the state. So I know that there are sort of different projects that are happening in terms of the impact, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about sort of a broad overview of, you know, the impact that this has had across the state in terms of where the projects are happening, where the research is being used. First, and then I'd sort of like to hear a little bit about the two LCCMR bills that we're considering and what sort of impact those would have across the state as well.
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair and members, it's a good question. I think I'm looking for my information about this. I think it's I might need to ask staff to send me some information, but I know that since 1991, we have had projects in every county of the state. So our projects are fairly well dispersed around the state. I can pop up some maps too to show you if you'd like where at least some of the projects in these two bills come from, but it is oftentimes projects that have impact, statewide impact. And then we kind of ask people to break up which region of the state. So because work sometimes may be taking place in one part of the state, but the impact may be, you know, statewide. So I'll see if my phone a friend information has come in and follow up with you when I get that.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nash. I would appreciate that information.
We'll give Ms. Nash a moment.
I've got it here. Okay, since since 1991, approximately $697 million from the fund has been spent on over 1,700 projects around the state.
Ms. Lawick.
I think, Ms. Nash, I think you had said you had maps about the two bills that we're considering. I don't know if we can share those now or if you want to talk about that or if we can just get those sent to members and maybe posted. I don't know what, Chair. I think it's really important. The statewide impact of the projects that we're funding through the LCCMR, you know, not just where they're happening, the projects themselves, but the impact that the research has across the state. So thank you for providing some information.
If you can look for those, Ms. Nash, or if we can get them.
Sure, I can pull this one up. Do you like for me to share my screen, Mr. Chair?
If you could, Ms. Nash.
You're able to see this. So this is the distribution of projects that kind of self-identified what region of the state they impact. In addition to that, there are 37 projects that have a statewide scope of work and impact. And of course, this is, you know, work that is looking at, you know, habitat, wildlife, you know, water quality, water issues, chemicals of emerging concern, environmental education, land acquisition, land restoration. Did I say environmental education? So we really run the gamut and take a look at environmental issues from just about every angle that you can possibly do, from researching to monitoring to on the ground implementation.
Representative Wozlawick.
That's really helpful visual. Thank you, Ms. Nash, for sharing that with us.
You bet.
That's all I have.
Ms. Nash, maybe if you could describe the 2020, what we call the 2020 bill was described as tentative recommendations, and that because it did not reach the 12, if you could maybe just describe that for a moment.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to explain how that happened or why that happened?
Yes, if you could.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, as I mentioned, kind of explain the process that members go through in evaluating and vetting the projects and then coming to decision on which projects they want to recommend. What happened in this instance was that after going through each of the projects that had received a score of, in this case, maybe it was 6 and above on a 10-point scale, after going through all of those projects and deciding together how much money to allocate to each of those projects, there was some money still remaining. And so what happened is the commission decided to go back and consider adding any project that had received a score of 5 and above. But at that point, I think there was a motion to include two projects that the commission had not received a proposal from. And that motion did achieve a simple majority vote. But then when it went to voting on the entire package, it required 12 votes, but only 10 votes were received. And so the, I can't guess what was in people's minds when they voted to not support the package, but there were a couple members that stated on the record their reasons. And it sounded to be that it was concerned about the constitutionality of one of those added projects, which was about wastewater treatment grants. There was another project as well that caused some concern. I think it was going to a private entity. And I know we did work with members to help address some of the concerns about that. But it sounded as if the primary concern was about the wastewater treatment grants being added.
And the difference between that and the 2021, we call the 2020 recommendations.
And again, the 2021 recommendations received unanimous support. So full agreement on that.
So members, if maybe staff could put up the spreadsheet of the projects. We did have this up 2 days ago, and while they're doing that. And I think that was our staff, Ms. Nash.
Oh, not me. Okay.
I think Mr. Strohmeyer is doing that, but.
No, I'm not. Oh. Ms. Nash, if you could do that, please. Thank you.
Which spreadsheet did you want?
Page 6 and 7 was the Senate Fiscal Analyst, Dan Mueller.
Sure.
It's in, members, it's in your binder on page 6 and 7 after the first tab.
Okay, I'm getting it here.
For those watching at home, it takes a little bit for us to hop back and forth with Zoom.
Is this what you're looking for?
That's the fiscal one, so then we're looking for the, there, yes. And so we had some members with questions. Ms. Nash, if you could describe Project 017-A, Improving Pollinator Conservation by Revealing Habitat Needs.
Sure. So this is a project, as the project manager of this project stated, in her work plan, pollinators have two main needs, food and shelter. Most of the efforts to protect pollinators have focused on their food source. This project, however, aims to understand the largely unknown needs that wild bee pollinators have for shelter. And so the project is going to use genetic sequencing to reveal on a large scale which plants pollinator bees need to build their nest and overwintering shelters throughout Minnesota. And the information from this project will allow more specific protection and enhancement of habitat across the state. And the information will be contributed to the Minnesota Bee Atlas, which is a statewide list of native bees found in Minnesota. It's an effort, it's volunteer driven, and it's an effort that we have also funded. And then also included in the Minnesota Biodiversity Atlas, which is curated by the Bell Museum.
And this, Ms. Nash, was vetted by the LCCMR in 2020 and received a recommendation and is from the University of Minnesota, is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And then the next one under that, 018-A.
Mr. Chair, this one is called Bee Minnesota, Protect Our Native Bumblebees. This is also a University of Minnesota project. Five of Minnesota's 23 species of native bees are considered vulnerable, endangered, or critically endangered. And the global decline in bee populations has been attributed to habitat loss, pesticide use, parasites, and pathogens. This project is focusing on that last issue in the list, pathogens, specifically two pathogens, one of which is spread by, the spread is exacerbated by the commercial rearing of some eastern bumblebees. And then the other is a viral pathogen that is spread by honeybees. So this project is trying to understand the prevalence of these pathogens in Minnesota. They're actually going to be testing a virus neutralizer. And then they're also going to be educating beekeepers, and that's where the Bee Minnesota term comes in. That's the name of their education program. So they're educating beekeepers about best management practices for keeping managed bees as healthy as possible.
Members, are there any questions? Seeing none, let's proceed to 049-AH.
Mr. Chair and members, this is called Tools for Supporting Healthy Ecosystems and Pollinators. This is a project by the DNR. This is a project about how insects sometimes need specific plants to address their nutritional needs. And then likewise, plants also need specific insects sometimes to pollinate and complete their life cycle. An example of this that we're all pretty aware of is monarchs and milkweeds. But there isn't a good resource that can be used by land managers or even citizens that provides these specific pairings and dependencies. And so the project is going to compile data from the scientific literature. They're going to use plant specimens and collections, and they're also going to talk to experts, and they're going to translate that data into a user-friendly tools. One is a pollination field guide handbook, which would be a companion to an already existing field guide for native plant communities. And then they're also going to create a plant selection tool for managers to help them when they're planning their restoration efforts so that they can better pick plants for their restoration to support and enhance pollinator communities.
Members, any questions? Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, Ms. Nash. I just want to clarify, and maybe this is too simple and straightforward a question, but it feels important to me to ask. These well-vetted and important, all of these projects, I'm just poring over this list. It's just remarkable, all the good and important work that is held in these potential projects. If LCCMR does not go through this year, these projects, there's not a backup plan. They will not happen. Is that correct?
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrison, I believe that's the case. In fact, I know that one of these projects already the staff have had their hours reduced. So they're very, very part-time right now, just kind of hanging in there because there are no other funds to fund the project.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nash. I just, that would be so unfortunate for our state. Thank you for that clarification.
Next up, 070B, unprecedented change threatens Minnesota's pristine lakes.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a project by the Science Museum of Minnesota. This project is trying to solve a mystery, and that is that where we would expect to find pristine lakes in some of the most remote areas of the state, instead, we're finding lakes that are experiencing thick green algal blooms. And the typical sources of nutrients that one might think lead to algal blooms, typically land use changes, erosion, runoff, leaking septic systems, those things are not obviously present in these situations. So it is a mystery. The hypothesis is that it's a combination of climate change as well as this kind of mysterious dust and mineral matter depositions being brought in through the atmosphere. And so water quality in remote lakes is rarely monitored, and our air quality monitoring in Minnesota apparently does not measure that dry deposition dust fall material. So this project will do high-resolution monitoring of the water quality in 12 state and national forest and park lakes. And then they'll also do sediment cores, which will hopefully reveal some of those dust-borne nutrient events and help figure out what they were caused from, where they came from. And then the idea is also that this project will possibly identify lakes that are at most risk of this happening, so that potentially it can be averted in the future.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nash, for being here today. The question I would have, as they're looking, as this project will be looking at lakes that are pristine, were these lakes that they're choosing, are they specifically targeted because they've been experiencing this problem, or is it just a random distribution of the lakes that are being chosen?
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, I believe they do have evidence that it's happening on some of these lakes, but they'll also be using some control lakes, just to make sure that it's scientifically significant, the analysis that they'll be doing.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. Okay, and I appreciate hearing that. It's great to hear that they've got that scientific approach where they've got control lakes, and they've got some that are experiencing the problem. So I appreciate the way that they're approaching it and making sure that we will have a better understanding once this work is done.
Thank you. Next up, microplastic transporters of contaminants 087-B.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a University of Minnesota project. Global production of plastics is now more than 350 million metric tons a year. These plastics get broken down into small particles called microparticles and sometimes nanoparticles as well. They're too small for the naked eye, and they find their way into our environment. And then, unfortunately, they get consumed by humans, by fish, and wildlife, and they can cause digestive and reproductive issues and even death. There's documentation of animals that have die. They have their whole stomachs full of plastic material and they basically starve to death. So as if the plastic particles aren't bad enough by themselves, they can bind with and carry other harmful chemicals such as PCBs, PAHs, PFAS, which you've been hearing a lot about lately. These are things that are found in pesticides and herbicides and sometimes in the plastic itself. So this project is going to determine how much and which contaminants of concern are taken up by some of the most common microplastics. And then it's going to evaluate how microplastics change the fate and transport of those chemicals of concern in Minnesota waters. Again, hopefully give us a better way to predict the impact of this kind of environmental contamination and hopefully some insights into how it may be remediated.
Members, any questions? Oh, Representative Morrison.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, thank you. Not a question, I just feel compelled to comment. That was a pretty terrifying summary of this current situation and strikes me as an incredibly important study for us to pursue. Thank you for that summary, Ms. Nash.
Next up, 123C, environmental education on state waterways.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Minnesota Freshwater Quest. This is a project by Wilderness Inquiry. This is, a couple of these projects here are environmental education projects. This one is taking a learning tool that's been created nationally and adapting it for Minnesota using freshwater species as the hook to get kids interested. So the program has kids adopt a species and then guides them on a quest to participate in some hands-on environmental education on local waterways. They collect and share water quality data, and then they complete a student-led project to improve the environment for their adopted species. This project is focused on upper elementary and middle school aged youth. It's got a specific focus of connecting diverse and underserved students to outdoor experiences that increase the stewardship of our next generation. And then it hopefully results in real world projects that improve our water quality in Minnesota's lakes, rivers, and streams. The aim for this project is to connect 10,000 youth in all regions of the state.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of several, it looks like, in here, and hopefully we'll talk about more of them, that engage youth both in the outdoors and in STEM inquiry and potentially careers. That strikes me as so important as the complexity of our problems increases. We need our bright young minds working on finding solutions to these big problems. So grateful that Wilderness Inquiry for engaging on this issue, and thanks for describing that project.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash, for the presentation. The question I have is, I'm happy to hear that they're looking at making sure we've got great diversity of students being approached in it. Do you know what their thoughts are on how to specifically be engaging people, youth who are more in disadvantaged areas that typically don't have the opportunities to make these connections? And I'm thinking in, say, North students who are North Minneapolis and some of those areas where the youth have more challenges having the access to these kind of opportunities and learning.
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, yes, I think it all sort of starts out with relationships with schools. So I think they are working in partnership with schools and other organizations that are working with underserved youth and forming partnerships and trust there and building on each other's strengths and leveraging work that's already being done as well.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. It helps give me a little better understanding of it. And I'm glad to hear that they're going to be reaching out, and particularly in these areas where the youth have been underserved in the past. So thank you.
Looks like we have actually have more information about each project. And Ms. Nash, these are available for the public to see if they want to look at the projects, is that correct?
I am sorry, I forgot I was sharing my screen. I was trying to sneak to find the answer of who they're partnering with, because I know that they had a nice list of partners on this one. So yes, there is there is a page on our website. I'll go to the top here so you can see. And all of the projects that are recommended for funding, we ask them to develop draft work plans that we post on our website, so that in just this kind of situation, if legislators have questions, we can go here and take a look and see what the details are. So these work plans, then if projects are approved for funding, these work plans then would go before the commission in final form and need to be approved by the commission before the recipient is eligible to start funding. And then that work plan also forms the basis of their 6-month updates that they provide to us throughout the life of the project, so that we are also learning from what they are learning. And we are also ensuring that, again, their spending is consistent with what has been approved and fits within our guidance on allowable expenses, et cetera.
Thank you. I'm just going to keep moving a little bit, because I think the next one is a STEM one as well. And is it urgent or?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say thank you to Ms. Nash for sharing this additional information. This is a question I get from people, is how can they learn more about these projects? And so I appreciate you referencing and taking the time to come through. I think this is something very important, and I'm making notes of it, because I'm going to want to make sure to include this link in my next legislative update.
Good. You bet.
Great. 124C, Teach Science, Schools and STEM Living Laboratories. Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a project by Climate Generation and Will Steger Legacy. And there was a statement in the work plan that stuck out to me, and this is saying that schools are living laboratories of learning, a place where the environment and infrastructure surrounding students can bring science and engineering practices to life. The focus of this project is to bring renewable energy and green job skills into the classroom. So Climate Generation will focus efforts on three schools in three regions, and they will provide training to 200 middle school teachers, supporting teachers through monthly meetings and 5 virtual classroom presentations on energy and environmental topics. Their goal in this effort is to build the comfort, confidence, and competence of teachers to deliver STEM and environmental-based education in their classrooms.
Um, 207-F, Pollinator Central.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, this is Pollinator Central Habitat Improvement with Citizen Monitoring. This is a project proposed by Great River Greening. This would provide habitat on 420 acres of traditional and non-traditional sites, such as roadsides and turf grass. So this is following up on some of the recommendations that came out on a report to the governor in 2018 that highlighted the value of even sort of small pockets of habitat for pollinators, creating kind of, this project is focusing efforts on a corridor between Hastings and St. Cloud and providing these kind of hopscotch habitat clusters throughout. And Great River Greening's model is using volunteer muscle to conduct the plantings and restorations, thereby leveraging resources at the same time that they are, you know, providing education and are engaging oftentimes new audiences in land restoration and enhancement. So they're aiming to engage 400 habitat volunteers in this project, both in the plantings themselves and then in subsequent monitoring to ensure that what the goal of increased pollinators is being achieved.
Thank you. 209F.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Pollinator and Beneficial Insect Strategic Habitat Program. This is a Board of Water and Soil Resources project. It's a new initiative for them to restore and enhance about 1,000 acres over 90 projects to make habitat improvements for at-risk species, including the rusty patch bumblebee, as well as for other declining insects such as dragonflies, native bees, and butterflies. The funds for this project would be distributed in 2 different ways. One of them is through cost share through SWCDs for lands that are enrolled in RIM and CRP. And then secondly, they will be running a competitive grants program for work that would be conducted on city parks, county parks, and other natural areas. The beauty of this project also is that Bowser really is kind of the lead agency in terms of hosting best practices and the latest science on pollinators. So through this work, they're going to try to create a template conservation plan for pollinators that would be a tool available to others that could be replicated. And then they're also always collecting information on best practices and lessons learned and making sure that those are on their website.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. 247PH.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Pollinator Habitat Creation along Urban Mississippi River. This is a Friends of Mississippi River project. This is one of the projects that fell into our small grant category, which is grants under 200,000. This is a new category that the LCCMAR created, and the intent was to diversify the funding recipients and also to kind of prioritize efficiency and close to the ground kind of work. So this was one of those projects. And this project would create about 27 acres of diverse pollinator and wildlife habitat within the Mississippi River corridor in the Twin Cities at three sites. One is River Heights Park in Inver Grove Heights. Another is within the Mississippi River Gorge Regional Park. And then a third is at Ole Olson Park in North Minneapolis. And that would be creating 2 acres of new riverfront prairie that would be in addition to 2 acres that Friends of Mississippi River worked on previously to restore.
Members, any questions? 259 FH. I think I'm going to have to get stronger reading glasses. Ms. Nash. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah. I may not be scrolling. I'm sorry. I'm not keeping up here. Okay, 259 FH. This is restoring turf to native pollinator gardens across the metro. This is a request by a group called Wilderness in the City, again, in our small grants program. And this is the first time that this group has applied for funding. So it's showing that I think what the LCCMR was looking for, diversifying, is successful in this instance. This is really a community-driven effort to reduce some of the turf grass in the Metro Park system and replace it with pollinator gardens. So they will work with the 10 park implementing agencies to identify eligible spaces. And then these funds will allow them to design the work, to buy the plant materials, and then to organize volunteers to plant them. The hope with this project is also to build up a volunteer network to adopt these gardens and to contribute to their ongoing maintenance. So this is really a community-driven effort in partnership and in agreement with the park agencies.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nash, when you referenced the park agencies in the metropolitan area, can you give a little bit more, you know, who they are? Is it just through Met Council? Is it the counties? Or does it get down to actual the cities?
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair and members, there are 10 park implementing agencies. I don't know if I'll get them all, but Anoka, let's see, it's, I don't know that I'll be able to get them all, but Three Rivers Park District, Dakota County, City of Bloomington, did I say Dakota, Anoka, Ramsey counties? That's probably not 10, but I'm getting close. So it's just for the regional parks that are, you know, guided with assistance in planning and funding through the Met Council, but this is actually on the actual park level. So this group will be working with the individual parks, starting with a park in Dakota County.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. That helps give me a better idea. It sounds like as they build they'll build a volunteer base to help take care of them. Will these demonstration projects also have things that if people see them, that there'll be information available where they could see what they could replicate in their own yards then?
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, absolutely.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Nash. That's awesome. I'll look forward to seeing those projects, see what I can bring back home. Thank you.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about, and I don't think we've talked about this one, 167-DH, testing effectiveness of aquatic invasive species removal methods out of UND.
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, members, that is indeed what they're doing. And I'm going to have to switch over to a different, some different notes here.
Ms. Nash, that's not the rocks not fun, is it?
No, this is This is primarily looking at some of those CD3 cleaning systems that you may have seen that have been installed at some public access sites throughout the state. It's the idea is to create tools that could be used on a voluntary basis to people who are coming on and off of lakes to remove water, to remove particles of invasive species that might be hanging to the boat or to the trailer. And it's done on a voluntary basis. So this is going to be looking at how effective those methods are at actually reducing the spread of invasive species. And it's going to be compared with some of the other traditional methods that are like the hot water spray that is required by Department of Natural Resources when invasive species are found on a boat. So these are potentially a great tool that can be used throughout the state. And this project is being conducted in partnership with the company that creates that tool, again, to evaluate the effectiveness to make sure that, if we are gonna use them statewide, let's make sure that they're actually doing what we hope they're doing.
Representative Lislawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just sort of want to confirm this with Ms. Nash, but up until the last project that Representative Morrison mentioned, the ones that we were going through were projects that were recommendations of the LCCMR, but that were not funded in the Senate bill. Is that correct?
Ms. Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wazlowick, yes, that is correct. So the testing effective aquatic invasive species removal methods appears to be in both the House and the Senate version of the bill, but everything else that we've talked about, I think, are ones that were deleted in the Senate version of the bill.
Okay. And I think it's just really important. I know just when I was listening to the information about all of these projects, just how important it's not pollinating. Just a thing that's, people who like bees are, it's important to them that they have these. They're important across the state. And they're important to a lot of different people, whether it's folks who have an interest in them or are gardeners or even in agriculture, the importance of pollinators is a big thing for our state. And I think it's really important to understand that, that the LCCMR understood that and wanted to fund these projects because of the benefits that they have for people across the state. So I want to point that out, and just also noting the pieces about the STEM education too. I've worked in schools for a long time, and I think one of the things that I've sort of been focused on has been not just STEM education, but who's sort of being left out of that STEM education. I think it's really important to ensure that, the state in what we're doing, the projects that we're funding, that we're investing in STEM education and making sure that we're reaching out to some of the populations that maybe don't have access to these programs and maybe don't have the, haven't been exposed to it and don't necessarily maybe know that they're interested in it because they haven't had the opportunity to take part in these programs. So just want to point that out. I think that's a piece that a lot of the programs that Environment Fund and Legacy Fund and other things that the state invests in are directed at getting especially young kids who are maybe not exposed to STEM involved in STEM. And that's really good for us as a state, wanting to get kids involved and also looking at, future, these projects, these folks who are working on this research and stuff, that's where these kids are gonna go, right? If they're interested in STEM, some of them might end up going into these sorts of roles in the future and continuing to help the state with the research and the projects that are really important to our environment. So just wanted to point that out and make a couple comments, and I appreciate the time that you've taken to walk us through these projects. I think, as I said, just listening to them, I'm sort of amazed at the work that's being done and the work that we want to get done, and also how this really impacts not just the research, impacts not just sort of folks interested in pollinators, but how the rest of us can also help to enhance pollinator habitat ourselves. And help with the issues we're seeing with pollinators. So thanks a lot for your help today walking us through those projects.
Members, will go down to line 291-J, the wastewater treatment grants, and that's what Ms. Nash is referencing with the hangup in the 2020 recommendations. You should note that that wastewater treatment plant, that project is not included in either the House or the Senate bill. So it should be off the table. It's not included in either bill. The next one, the emerging issues account, wastewater renewable energy demonstration grants. That was a project that was added by the House to try to find some compromise of looking at installations of renewable energy, solar energy at wastewater treatment grants, something that has been done at the Met Council. So that is where what that funds were trying to find some compromise on the wastewater treatment grant. On page 10, there are a number of new projects in both the House and the Senate. And Ms. Nash, if I can just walk through those, and then I think we'll be done relatively quickly. So I don't know if you've got page 10 there. So Mora Lake High Water Mitigation, is that a project that was presented to the LCCMR?
Mr. Chair, members, no.
The next one, wastewater pond optimization. It seems like we've done something there previously. Ms. Nash?
Mr. Chair, you are correct. We had some funding in 2018 and then I think again in 2019 to the Pollution Control Agency to work with mechanical and wastewater pond projects throughout the state to optimize them. And this does appear to be a continuation of that previous project.
And is that the project we looked at on a tour north of Winona? Is my memory correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's right.
NRI, mineral and water research.
Mr. Chair, we did have a legislative addition to our bill in 2019 for NRI to do some of the work that looks like might also be included in this project.
Chloride pollution reduction, was that a project that came before LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Water volume quality and storage grants, was that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Mr. Chair, no.
Blue Earth County stormwater management, was that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Mr. Chair, no.
Medelia floodplain monitoring, modeling, excuse me again, I am gonna have to get stronger reading glasses. Was that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
A flood gauge for Waterville, Ms. Nash, is that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Waterville Cannon River Dam System Study, is that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Stormwater retention in urban areas, is that a project that came before the LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Water storage and quality plan, is that from Bowser? Did Bowser submit a project to LCCMR?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And then we get to the transfers. And if you can maybe just describe the Sauk River Dam removal and what that means and what we had to do with that financing.
Sure, Mr. Chair. This was a project that was funded in laws of 2019. And before we even got to the work plan approval stage, we learned from the city that the project was not going to be feasible. And so they gave a presentation to the, you know, we worked with them for quite a while to see if we could do anything to fit with what their project was going to go on and look like, and it did not seem feasible. So they did return that money to LCCMR, and then the LCCMR subsequently voted, and it was a unanimous vote to request the legislature to repurpose those funds. So that was $2.768 million, and it looks like that on the House side was used to increase funding to two of the recommendations that the LCCMAR had made. It looks like it was added to continue the lawns to legumes project. And then also looks like some of the funds were added to a project called Evaluating Coronavirus and Other Microbiological Contamination of Drinking Water Sources from Wastewater. And that was a project that the commission kind of jump-started with some of our emerging issues funds, which is a small, you know, relatively small amount of money that we have to respond to urgent issues kind of between our funding cycle. So that the emerging issues funded this project to get it started, and it looks like this would continue the project to allow it to go statewide.
And Ms. Nash, I just want to be fair, so I'm going to ask the same questions on what the House has added. The unprecedented change threatening Minnesota's pristine lakes, was that vetted by the LCCMAR?
Mr. Chair, yes. In fact, that is one of the recommendations in this bill. And so this appears to be additional funding towards that request.
And the COVID-19 effects on wastewater treatment you just mentioned, that was heard in emerging issues, so it has been vetted. Protect community forests through Emerald Ash Borer. Has that been vetted by the LCCMAR?
Mr. Chair, yes. That, again, is one of the projects included as a recommendation in this project, and this appears to be additional funding towards that project, so increasing.
And Lawns to Legumes, Bowser, has that been vetted by the LCCMAR?
That is a project that has been funded with Environment and Natural Resources Trust funds previously.
Water volume, quality, and storage grants, has that been vetted by the LCCMR?
Mr. Chair, no.
I believe that is a general fund recommendation, governor's recommendation for water storage. I don't know. I think that, but it's not been in front of the LCCMR.
Correct. And I do not see that in the House.
No.
That's just an addition for the Senate, I believe.
I don't know if Mr. Jashke is on, if he could just confirm that was a governor's rec for general fund.
Mr. Chair and members, John is here.
Ms. Becker-Cadelka, introduce yourself for the record.
I see Executive Director Jashke is on, so I'll defer to him.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I think the question was, is there an amount in the governor's recommendations regarding water storage, basically, was the question. The answer to that is yes. The governor recommendation was for $3 million for the biennium for that, along with some policy that would be enacted to, in essence, establish a program to put the funding into.
And Mr. Jashke, that was general fund, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Members, do you have any other questions for Ms. Nash? Members and members of the public, there were some questions on why, when do we meet and why do we meet or how do we meet? The leadership of both houses have set a calendar where the House meets on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And we meet at 9 o'clock. So when we talk about having the gavel, the House has the gavel on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. The Senate has the gavel on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 1 o'clock. So those are the agreed on times for the conference committee to meet. So tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it would be the Senate's turn. At 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, it would be the House's turn. There are no meetings on Sunday. The legislature needs to adjourn on May 17th. We just went through some excellent projects that are in the LCCMR, which has been held up for a year, along with large amounts of policy in this bill. We are committed to keep doing the work to try to resolve these issues and get a bill that can be passed, or bills that can be passed, where we can get the LCCMR funded and get this work done. and get our agencies funded and our policy completed. So I want to thank you for your work today. We are adjourned.